what you had to do as elected leaders, and this is what we have to do as leaders a lot of times, is we have to project confidence even when we don't have it. I have no control over an airborne virus. Are you kidding me? What do you think a mayor can control where people walk around and who kisses who? And all? Of course not. This is stupid. But I got to stand here and act like I am in control of this situation.
Right.
And I'm not at all. But I got to project confidence that I am.
Welcome to Hitting the Ceiling, the show for entrepreneurs and leaders who refuse to let a ceiling become the end of their story. He started his career as a basketball mascot and ended up as its most popular mayor. Paul Ten Haken built one of the Midwest's best-known digital agencies from a spare bedroom. Then one day, sitting across from his wife in a diner booth, wondering if he should just quit and go get a salary again, then sold the whole thing off to run for office. And then came the part the headlines didn't catch. The criminal investigators who came knocking because of lies, the friendships that disappeared, the mental health he had to fight for in public, and today he's walking out of City Hall on his own terms. But before he goes, he's telling a story he doesn't usually tell. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Hey, Mark. Thanks.
Tell me about that moment in time you were sitting at the diner and you're like, nuts to this.
Well, I think almost every entrepreneur has a moment in their chapter like I had with my wife in the diner where we were questioning, what have we done? And should we just mail this in and go back to being just a salaried employee and having the comfort and confidence of getting a paycheck every 2 weeks, because I was maybe a year and a half, 2 years into a company that I had founded in 2008, a digital marketing agency, and it was going good. We just had cash flow issues. I mean, we were almost growing too fast, and AR, and you know, clients didn't pay on time, and you know, I had employees that I had to pay, and so we just didn't basically have enough in our account at that point to pay myself. And it was the first time in my working career, like, I'm not going to get paid this pay period. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to figure out, are we doing the right thing? And as luck would have it, went to the mailbox, you know, after lunch, and there was one of our clients who had been hounding to finally pay us, had paid us, so there was a check in there. So I was able to make some money that week, and the rest is history. But it's a time I'll look back. I mean, it's almost 15, 16 years ago now that that happened. But I always remember it as kind of a pivotal moment in my entrepreneurial journey of kind of fishing or cutting bait. Like, am I going to stick with this, or are we going to move on?
It's funny you say that, because I always tell the story with our EOS implementers. So most of them are former entrepreneurs. And one of the things that really differentiates them from others is really the waiting by the mailbox to wait for the check to come, mm-hmm. to make payroll. And mm-hmm. I had that experience because I worked in my company. We had Big Pharma as our customer. And around the same time you did, 2007, 2008, companies were using their vendors as a bank, mm-hmm. right? They're just saying, hey, go do this work for me. And then the terms go from net 30 to 60 to 90 or more. And it caused so much cash issues for all the small businesses that were working for those firms. So I am with you. I know what it is like to wait by the mailbox and be like, man, if I only listened to my finance professor,
right?
Who would just say cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. And then I was like, yeah, that's nice. And until you actually experience what cash flow, cash flow, mm-hmm. cash flow means, you could be highly profitable on paper, be growing like gangbusters, and go out of business. It's probably one of the largest causes of business failure is growing 100%. Too fast without cash flow.
And what's interesting, Mark, during that time is, so we were a digital marketing company, so we were placing a lot of online media. So I would place a lot of media for clients. They'd rack up a $30,000 media invoice for that month, and then I'd invoice them. And then 30, 60, 90 days. So I already incurred the cost. I already placed your media. The clicks happened, the you know, pay-per-click clicks happened, you know, whatever it was. And so mm-hmm. I served as their bank, is absolutely right. So mistake in the billing model, that I soon learned is I need to prepay for the media we're going to place. Otherwise, I'm just floating this for them. And so learned some hard lessons that way too.
You make it through that with your business. I'm assuming it starts to grow again. Or what was the time difference between that time in the diner making those choices to running for mayor?
You know, it's probably about an 8-year window. And the company after that, the diner conversation really just jumped on a rocket ship at that point and I didn't look back. And it was the age old success story where, you know, we grow and income is good and my flexibility was good and I really loved what I was doing, but I did not feel as fulfilled as I thought I should be. I'm like, I have everything. This is the American dream, man. I mean, why am I not more content and more happy? Through a series of different circumstances, just decided, hey, I think I'm supposed to serve in a different way, not just serve this company and my clients, but how am I going to be eulogized? What am I going to be remembered for? Is it that I knew Twitter really well and I could place paid search ads better than anyone else? And like, that's kind of a hollow existence. And so just kind of came to a point at a crossroads where I had to do something different with my work life and unwound myself from my business slowly over the next 2 years to try to figure out what's next. Where am I going to find more fulfillment? And it came in the form of running for office, not necessarily winning office. You said that in the intro. I felt called to run. I'm like, I'm going to run, probably lose, which is fine because I don't really want to do this anyway, but I feel like I should because, you know, give back to my community. I'll lose and then I'll pivot. I'll figure out what's next and yeah. I lose. And so here I am 8 years later, wrapping up.
Now, question for you on the exiting of the business, because you hit a ceiling of a different type, a personal ceiling of really coming to the point in time where you're like, hey, there's something more for me and this isn't fulfilling enough. And we describe hitting the ceiling as chaos, as frustration, as in some cases stagnation where you're failing to grow. And it sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you just felt like there was nothing more for you. And I would kind of classify this as the stagnation of a personal nature than of a business nature.
Yeah. Yeah, stagnation of purpose, I would say, would be a better way to look at it. And that was, you know, and again, back to my earlier statement, I wrote my eulogy, you know, sometime in 2016, something like that. And very little in there was about my business. It was about people and impact on those around me and the community and my faith and my family. And I'm like, why am I stressing so much about work and cash flow and some of the turnover we've experienced and getting new clients? And none of this is going to be how I want to be remembered. It's not in the obituary I just wrote through this exercise. So why am I spending so much mental capacity and time on this kind of cause and this company? And I know this sounds like, well, what else are you going to do? You know, sit in your pajamas and watch Price is Right? And it's like, yeah, we have to have an earthly purpose of work. But I had just done everything I could do there. And so it's like, all right, what's next for me? And then I wanted to move, as John Maxwell talks about, move from success to significance. So it's like, all right, I had some success, but I didn't feel significance. And it's like, where can I find significance now? And to me, significance, if you really want to find significance, it's when you can feel like you are helping mankind, you are helping people. And some people can get that purpose through their business. They create a product that helps people but at the core of elected service, I mean, I'm a public servant. I'm a servant. No one goes to college and says, I want to be a servant when I grow up. I'm a servant of people. And so I found that significance in doing this work. And so it was a midlife crisis, call it whatever you want, but it was a pivot from success to significance, and it was a good one.
I love that. And you use the word cause, and I'm in the process of writing the next deep dive book for EOS and the Mastery series, and it's all about the vision component. And it's going to be, so the book is slated to come out in April of 2028. So I got some time here, right? And you use the word cause because we talk a lot about a passion, a purpose, and a cause. And most people really use them interchangeably, but I don't think that's right. I think the passion is internal. It's to you, what lights you up. And maybe making money and doing digital ads could be a passion in the art and science of marketing, but it's really about the activity and it's really internal to you. Then I think purpose is really about turning that passion external, and you're using that passion to make an impact and make other people's lives a little bit better. And then cause, to me, is when other people around you adopt your purpose and it starts to grow. It starts to go off and gain legs to it, and other people are joining in on your cause, and you don't even have to pay them. They just do it because they believe in that so much. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about that as a definition?
Love it. And that's exactly the high, the dopamine hit that I get every day from this work as a mayor of a city of 225,000 people, is that I get to lay out a cause for the community and say, hey, this is something that's important to me. And by osmosis, it becomes important to everyone else, because I get the bully pulpit to show them, hey, we have some recidivism challenges. We have low literacy scores in our third grade. We have a need for more mentors. We have, you know, some homelessness challenges we have to work through. And I get to use this platform to get the rest of the community excited about that cause and say, hey, walk with me on this journey and live for something bigger than yourself, right? Find significance in serving your city, in serving your fellow man, in serving your community. And I couldn't get that at a digital marketing company. I couldn't get a platform of 225,000 people to say, hey, we need more mentors because there's a lot of kids in our school district that are growing up in single parent homes. I mean, that wasn't a platform I could have. And so I have that now, and I've had it. And you use, you know, purpose and cause, and I sometimes use the separation between job, career, and calling. And that, you know, a job is, you know, my son has a job. He sells ice cream. He's 17. He works at an ice cream shop. That's a job. It's not a career. He's making money, meeting girls. It's just a job. Career is, you know, I have a career right now as a mayor. My previous career was as an entrepreneur. My next career will be, you know, whatever. But that calling stays the same across all those. I have a calling to love people, to serve people, to help people. I mean, that is a calling that transcends any career. So I can, my LinkedIn profile can change and my business card can change, but that calling will never stay the same. Or excuse me, will never change. It will stay the same. And I think that's what a lot of people suffer from, especially men, Mark, and I think men are terrible about this. Our calling, we think, is wrapped up in our job title. And so many men struggle when they exit. It's like, what am I? I was the CEO of this, and now I sold it. I don't know who I am anymore because that was my identity. It's like, wow, your identity should be bigger than that. You were just living out that identity through a career as the CEO of that company, or through a career as a mayor, or through a career as whatever that chapter was. So I look at it in a similar vein as you do with purpose and cause. For me, it's career and calling.
I love that. And when you think about retirement, then, you know, you're not going to retire from a calling.
Retirement to me is an Americanized made up concept that I'm a strong guy of faith. The Bible is a big part of my life. And I have yet to find anywhere in scripture where it says, hey, you're supposed to work till you're about 70 and then just chill out through the rest of your days. We have bought into this concept by watching Pacific Life commercials during the U.S. Open that says, hey, this is what you're supposed to do. Sock it away. Maybe do something you don't really like so you can eventually do what you want and what you like to do. Well, the premise is that you're doing stuff you don't like right now to get to something you do like. Well, you got a problem then if that's how you're approaching your career and your purpose. And so I think retirement is one of the biggest fallacies we've all fallen into. I think people's mental decline starts to happen once they retire. I think their sense of purpose really takes a dive once they retire. They don't know who they are. They don't know why they're here.
No doubt. I think that's a really interesting kind of way to approach that. And if you know that that's the case, if you know that you're not going to retire. You're going to continue on this calling until it's over. How do you think that relates to an entrepreneur who is running their business? How do they think differently if they believe what they're doing is a calling versus a job or a career? How does it change the way they make decisions and lead?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And the only thing I have in common with you, Mark, that I know of, and you know, we're on this podcast together and we haven't talked before this, is we are both going to die. Okay? We're both going to die. And it's the only thing we have in common with anybody we run into. We have that one commonality. And our job, our career, our company that we've built, whatever, is just really entrusted to us for a finite amount of time. And so you are not, you know, going to be remembered or eulogized by that job or that career. So when you think of it that way, what's the most important role you can play as an entrepreneur or as an owner? If you are in right, you're blooming right where you're planted and you know right where you're supposed to be, what should you be investing in more than anything else? My belief is it should be the people. It should be the people that you're working with. It should be the clients that you're working with, the customers, the impact and the relationships that you have on those people is the most important thing you can do as an entrepreneur or as a leader. Because if you do that right, all the other things will flow out of that. The clients will flow out of that. The P&L will grow out of that. Everything will grow out of that. But if you are not focused on that at the core, which is the people and the relationships, everything else is going to suffer. And quite honestly, I mean, I came from a retirement. My planning and public works director is retiring, or my planning director is retiring today. You know what? I asked, what's one word, Paul, that you would say to describe him? And I said, he is the most likable guy I've ever met. I have not met a single person that has ever had one negative thing to say about this guy. Never. And he's in a job where he has to tell developers, no, permits are taking too long, whatever. He's in a crappy job, and no one has anything bad to say about him. I'm like, what a legacy you're leaving, Jeff. Like, what a legacy, the impact you have had on people. No one's going to remember that we had a record building permit last year under your watch, or that we permitted more housing units in 2023 than any time. No one's going to remember that. But everybody is going to remember the guy you were, man, and the impact that you had on others and the downstream effect that had on everybody who touched you. That is a legacy, brother. And I think that's what, when we are an entrepreneur or a business owner or a mayor or whatnot, and we've had all these people entrusted to our care, that should be our number one priority.
I love that. And I think it's totally true, because we are entrusted with the care of the people who work for us, our customers, and we get an opportunity to positively impact each and every one of those people, which takes me to a little bit of a story. We at EOS Worldwide, we have a quarterly collaborative exchange. The quarterly collaborative exchange, known as QCE, is where all the implementers from all over the world come to 5 or 6 different locations all over the world once a quarter to train, to learn from one another. And one of our, the only one co-founder that we have is Don Tinney. He is a wise man, and he gets up and he shares his definition of love, because we think about it in terms of our job as implementers is to love our clients, love each other. And if we can do that and we put the love into all the work that we do, they're going to ultimately get what they want from their businesses. And I'm going to read what he creates as a definition of love. And I'm going to kind of paraphrase his definition, because I think that when you love your people, it actually is what produces freedom to and freedom from, which is really an important thing, because when we think about having the right people in the right seats, they have to be able to be free to go do what they are put on this earth to do. And we're sort of creating that. So he writes that love isn't a feeling. Love is a choice to help and not to harm, to achieve the greater good. Even when I feel angry, hurt, or afraid, I will choose to act constructively, not selfishly or destructively. And the big thing there is it's a choice. Just like the person who's retiring probably chose to be loving in all of those instances, even when he's saying no to something
hard.
That really, yes, yes. What do you think about that definition? And how does it relate to business in your mind? Or running any organization like you are?
I think it's a great definition. And I think, you know, we talk about running a business. I'm running a city right now of 2,000 employees, $800 million budget. But I'd like to think of it as just a big ass
business. Just a big business.
I think we are judged a little bit as leaders by how we deal with the most difficult people that are put in our path. And what's been great about this role for me is I've had to love on some people who have been very hard to love. And in the business world, I was able to fire clients and say, you know, you're not a fit. I don't like the way you're treating our account person. I don't like the way you talk to my people. I don't like the demands you're putting on our team. We're going to separate. This just isn't working out. Well, at City Hall, I can't say, you know what, you're kind of a challenging resident. You're very disrespectful. I don't think this city is working out for you. I think it's time for you to move somewhere else. You don't get that option. You have to love on those challenging people. And you learn a lot about yourself and what grace looks like for others when you have to love people who you have no other choice but to love, and you can't push them out of your life. And it's one of the things I'm always going to be thankful for about this work is what it's taught me about dealing with people who I have no idea what's going on in their life. And I have no idea. Pandemic was great for me because I had no idea why people were so angry. I just knew they were angry and they needed a scapegoat, and government was the scapegoat. We were the reason the economy was bad. We were the reason their kids couldn't go to school. We were the reason for everything wrong. And it taught me a lot about grace and love and just mercy for people.
What other parallels of running a government versus running a business? I mean, I think you just hit on most of them, but what were some of the surprises that you're like, oh, didn't see that coming?
Mark, when I first got into office, and you'll see some parallels to today in our political landscape, people seem to be gravitating towards business people that are getting into elected office. Like, I'm not a career politician. I've signed the front of a paycheck and I know how to run a company and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, we know a lot of people who run a company who would be terrible in politics. So that's not necessarily a good indicator of success in public office because you have to have the right demeanor and so forth. But people ask me a lot early on, hey, are you running City Hall like a business? You did good in business. Are you running City Hall like a business? I'm like, well, in some ways, yes, but in a lot of ways, you know, the main goal of business is what? I mean, the number one goal of a business is profit. And that's what everybody is striving for. That's not the goal of a city. I mean, if it was, we would not have public transit. We would not have outdoor pools. We would not have parks. Like, none of this stuff. These are lost leaders. These all lose a lot of money. And so... that's why the Elon Musk Doge thing that happened, about a year ago now, it really bothered me because you can't just take someone who's living in the for-profit, publicly traded world and say, go fix government, because this is a different animal. And if you just think of it as like, well, that's not making us money, let's cut this, or there's waste here, let's cut this. It's like, well, but that waste that you call waste, that's paratransit, and that's how a handicapped person gets to the grocery store every day. And it costs us $30 for that ride. It's a lot of money. But without it, that person can't get groceries or to their medical appointment because it's their only way to navigate our city. So you have to have a compassionate heart that comes along with your business heart to do this work well. And I think when you can find someone where those two interlapped and intersect well, I think you get a good political leader. So that was kind of a surprise to me that some of the business concepts that I used in the private sector didn't overlap. But one thing that did overlap, and I mean, one of the reasons for this podcast is we did Traction. We ran EOS in my company. It ran it for 4 or 5 years, and it was great on a ton of fronts. And I was really skeptical. I'm like, man, do we need another freaking system? Like, I have so many systems in this company. One of my partners brought it to us, and I'm just like, you guys, I'm systemed out. 4 or 5 years later, our meetings were tight. We were hitting goals. I knew what everybody was up to. I knew what people had on their plate. We had a scorecard for the first time in our company's history. So when I started in city government, we had our first team meeting. I mean, again, this $800 million company, enterprise. And we had no system for goal setting, no system for a meeting. Everyone just sat around a table, talked about, oh, here's what's going on in public works. And it just was the biggest waste of time. And I'm like, you know what? I did this thing called EOS in my old company, and I want you all to read this book called Traction, and we're going to implement this. Well, it's for the private sector. This is, government's different. There's no scorecard on profits. I'm like, yeah, we'll modify some things, but these meetings suck. And we got to clean things up. And I got to know what you guys are up to. And like, I have no idea what my library team or my parks team or my streets, I have no idea what you're working on. What are your goals? Where are we going to be in 3 years, you know, with our wastewater plant? I don't know. And so we've ran Traction now for getting close to 7 years now in the city. And it's transformed the way we've run city government. And I'd love for us to be this case study that this model, while different than the private sector, can absolutely clean up and bring efficiencies to how government can run.
Wow, that is amazing. Now, what types of modifications did you have to make? I'm assuming you have some level of an accountability chart. I'm assuming you have some level of scorecarding and activity-based things. I'm assuming you have ROCs and a VTO. Do you have core values for the city?
When I started, Mark, no core values for the city. None. Put those in place, worked with a team. We put core values in, but called STICR is the acronym, STICR. Safety, teamwork, innovation, character, respect. And we weave those into everything we do. But we don't have a scorecard. Okay. We tried for a while. And here's why we don't have a scorecard. A lot of the data that people want to get out of city government is kind of trailing data. Like how many homicides did we have last year? Or what's our sales tax? So many things are out of our control versus in government, or in the private sector, you can control so many more things. Hey, our revenue was down last quarter, so we're going to tweak this. We're going to charge more for this. Well, I can't just raise taxes like that. I can't just add a new fee onto your front footage assessment to raise more money. It's like, it kind of is what it is. This is our revenue model. It's called taxes. And if the feds screw something up and attack Iran and gas prices, I mean, so many things impact our world that we have zero control over in government. So we got away from the scorecard is probably the one thing that we don't have, that we could have a scorecard on some things, but we don't. But everything else, we got VTO. We use 90.io for all of our meetings. We rate all of our meetings. We got great meeting hygiene. I'm the visionary. I got an integrator that runs all the meetings. It's my chief of staff. She's been incredible. I at a glance, if you had to tell me, or you asked me, hey, Paul, what are your quarterly rocks right now? The whole city of Sioux Falls, all 2,000 employees, know that vernacular. We have the same language set. So I can go to my streets department and say, what are your rocks this quarter? Street department guys used to think, well, what are my rocks? Like, what do you mean, street sweeping? Like, what? No, now they know.
Fill this pothole or that
what
pothole
rocks
with
mean,
rocks.
Right?
Right.
One of my biggest fears, but also one of my biggest hopes, is that the next administration, because I'm term limited and I'll be done this summer, is that they continue to keep the Traction model in place because it's transformed the way we're getting crap done here in City Hall.
What do you think stops people, other governments, from running on EOS?
Oh, I think government just is so inefficient, Mark, and we know this, but just we are so siloed. So I have 13 departments, or I think 12 departments. So what interaction is there between the library and our police department, right? Between our public health department and our fire department? Like, can you get – versus when I ran a digital marketing agency, we had the web engineering team, the digital analytics team, our creative team. They all had fingers that were woven in between each other and they all are connected. How do you make the library and the fire department feel like, hey, we're on the same team and we're swimming in the same direction towards the same goal? The only way you do that is you bring them all to the big table and you say, hey, all of what we do is interconnected towards a larger goal of making this the best city in the country for people to live, work, and play. And that, yes, you are part of a bigger mission. Because it's hard for them to see the stuff that they do in the library impacting what happens in public safety. So we've had to connect that dot. And that's why so many government agencies, they just operate independently. The FBI will operate independently of the EPA, and they'll operate independently of the Department of Interior. And the president will call a meeting once a quarter, and he'll put on TV to show all his cabinet heads, and they just kind of talk, and they show, see how we're collaborating, and we all talk. And it's like, no, this is just a PR stunt. But they're not having ROC meetings. They're not having L10s to hold each other accountable, you know. But that's what's great about local government too, Mark, if I can just put a plug there, is like we actually get crap done on the local level. We don't have the opportunity to shut down or, you know, things like that. Like we have to turn the lights on and flush the toilets and sweep the streets and collect the garbage. Like you can't pass on that. And so there's an accountability level that you have in local government to get stuff done, and traction, the EOS model forces you to get things done, and it forces group accountability, which the city employees had never had before. Because now every week, those leadership members, they got to get in front of their peers and say, I'm on track or off track on this goal. And they never had that level of accountability before. And it's forced them to get things done because it's peer driven as well.
Wow. Fantastic. It kind of, I'm thinking about IDS too. Mm-hmm. Now, do all 2000 government employees Sioux Falls know how to identify, discuss, and solve issues at the root so they go away forever?
No, it's that really happens at our, what we call our SLT, our senior leadership team level. So, you know, I have my L10, which you're going to say, hey, it's too big, but there's about 13 people at my L10 table. And you're like, wow, that's big. Well, by city ordinance, basically constitution, I have to have all these people direct report to the mayor. Now, back
to
the
point. You got
to
do what you got to do. No judgment here.
Back to your point. If I was running this like a business, I would streamline that crap. I would not have 13 direct reports. It's not sustainable. You think I can be a good leader of 13 different people? No leader should have more than 5, 6, maybe 7 direct reports. I got 13. So we have to, at that L10 is where we IDS stuff and we say, hey, here, a lot of times it's, this is something I'm seeing over our library. We've had a lot of homeless people coming in. They're camping out. They're scaring off families. What are we going to do about that? All right, let's figure out a solution. Well, police department says, well, maybe we can add some security team members there. And the parks department says, well, maybe we can provide some different sort of, you know, greenery or something to allow people a different place to go sit so they're not hanging out in the library all day. So they're starting to realize there is more collaboration amongst them than they initially maybe thought. And so we do have probably 3 or 4 IDS things every week that we're solving together as a group.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Now, do you know of any other governments that are running on EOS?
I know of none. Wow. I know of none, and I think that you guys have a golden opportunity to kind of shift the model a little bit. Say, hey, it's not the EOS, it's the GOS, you know, and because there's a few tweaks you'd make to the GOS that don't work in the EOS, but I'm telling you, there is a untapped market out there. Now my entrepreneur hat is on.
Yep.
To go into governments and say, hey, are your meetings being run like crap? And do you want to be transparent with your constituents about what your city government is working on? Mm-hmm. Well, this does that, because I can get stopped in the grocery store and they say, hey, what are some of the big things the city's working on right now? Well, let me pull up my 90.io right now. And like, here's a list of, you know, the rocks for this quarter that we have identified that are important, and had no way to do that before. So I think every at least city government, municipal government could run a GOS system and it could be effective.
That's amazing. Well, maybe you become an EOS implementer in the next chapter of your life and help us go do that.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
Speaking of your next chapter, do you know what you're going to do after the summer?
I subscribe to the motto and politics of be brief, be great, be gone. Yeah. I've never thought of politics as a career. I've always thought about it as a chapter service. And local government, as I mentioned, I think it's the best form of government there is, the best layer of government, because, Mark, you and I right now could decide, we could be sitting in Sioux Falls together and say, here's a problem, and we could have a potential ordinance to be read in front of the city council in 2 weeks, second reading another 2 weeks, it would be law in a month. Show me a layer of government that works that way. And we're just nimble and efficient. So I've loved serving in this office, but I'm going to get out of politics. And I'm starting my own consulting firm, and I want to do leadership development work, do some public speaking, and then may dabble in marketing again. You know, I have a marketing and branding background. I love marketing, just everything about marketing I love. And so would love to do some more. It's changing so much, too, with AI and generative content that marketers are using and so forth. So, but my passion is people and developing people. And so I'd like to specifically even help governments with developing people, leadership development programs, succession planning. Government's terrible about succession planning. You know, people put in a notice and be like, hey, my pension date's coming. I'm retiring in a month. And then we scramble. I'd be like, oh, crap, Jim Bob's done in the engineering department. Have we thought about that? Have we planned for that? And we're not real good about that. And so I'd like to help governments with that too.
Maybe help them implement EOS along the way.
1,000%, man. I'm an evangelist. And I don't put my name on a lot of things because unless it works. And there's no compensation for this podcast, by the way. Mary's asking here. This is purely just me being an evangelist for EOS because I have now had smashing success with EOS in both the public and private sector over the last, you know, almost 20 years of my life now, 15 years of my life. And it works. It's been good.
It's just such a simple system to manage the human energy, get people aligned on the same page, rowing in the same direction. It obviously works, and I'm an evangelist right along there with you. So a couple of questions about your journey. Sounds like, you know, where you sit here today, it might sound to the listener that it's sunshine and lollipops in Sioux Falls. Everything is great. But that's not always and hasn't always been the case for you in your journey as mayor. What was the first ceiling that you hit? You know, you get elected. It seems like it was a surprise to you. You thought you were going to lose. And some things start to happen that you didn't expect, and it's a ceiling of sorts. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I mean, the first ceiling right before I got elected, you mentioned the intro, is, I was running naively for an office thinking, oh, this will be, we'll all keep this above board and we'll run this campaign. And I had an opponent running against me accuse me indirectly of hacking into bank accounts and social media accounts and all this stuff during the campaign because I ran a tech business. So I'm all of a sudden this incredible hacker. So I got deposed.
In HubSpot.
Yeah, right? So I was deposed by the DCI and the sheriff's office, and all this came out 10 days before the election. And so the opponent knew exactly what they were doing. It was in an effort to smear my name, and no investigation gets done in 10 days. So this would just follow me through the election, and it was terrible. So talk about ceiling. I don't know if that was a ceiling, more like a valley. For sure, it was one of the hardest mental times of my life because my reputation was just really getting run through the mud. I'm like, why am I doing this? Why did I leave this great company and this great life of security and financial security and all the things to get my name smeared and to just get the crap kicked out of me publicly, just trying to serve the community. This is why people don't do this work. So that was terrible. But then I luckily they cleared me and it turned out really good and blah, blah, blah. And then I got elected. And then the first year was lollipops and rainbows, as you said. And then 2020 was just, for any leader, anybody who was in a leadership role, in 2020, and I'm talking a high test leadership role, I have an incredible amount of empathy for, because that was a ceiling that I couldn't break through, because COVID and what that did to our communities, what it did to people's mental health, what it did to the dialogue in our country, what it did to people's fear, people's hatred of government, people's distrust of government, of the CDC, of all the things. It was an incredibly, incredibly difficult time to lead through. With the benefit of hindsight, glad I led through it because I learned so much about myself through that. But wow, that was definitely a gauntlet for any leader to go through. And here in Sioux Falls, we had one of the first quote-unquote hot spots. Is kind of where that term came from. We have a huge pork packing plant, 3,300 people. And CNN's here, and Fox News, and MSNBC. I mean, they all descended on this city, sticking a mic in my face, like, what are you doing about this? And, you know, I had to answer, like, I don't know. You know, this is March of 2020. I don't know. There's this thing, and people putting hairnets over their faces and still going to work. And this was just the weirdest time. And so that was when I came off the reelection then in 2022. That's when I was like, I don't think I'm going to do this again, because that sucked. That last 4 years, man, just took it all out of me. And, you know, obviously did decide to rerun, but that was a ceiling, man. When you talk about a ceiling, 2020 was a ceiling, but busted through it through a few different ways. One, just leaning heavily on my faith, which gets me through a lot of challenges, but also, you know, realizing that in business, in life, in politics, you know, this too shall pass. Like, everything is a season, and it's going to end, no matter how low it is. Whether you're sitting in the diner without any money in your bank account, or you have a pandemic that seems to be ravaging the whole country, it's like, this will be over at some point. I don't know when, it'll be over. And people remember how you respond in a crisis. And Senator Mike Grounds called me during that time. We had a tornado around that time too, and he said, hey, here's what you need to remember. No one's going to remember the debt per capita of the city under your administration or the parks you did. They will remember how you responded in a crisis. That's what people remember. So use this time to be bold, be strong, like, respond well, because this will define you. This is going to define your legacy as a mayor by how you respond in a crisis. And we as leaders, business leaders too, we are defined by how we respond, not in the good times. It's easy to be a good leader in good times, but how will you respond in those hard times? That's what makes a good leader, is how they respond when their back is against the wall.
When the arrows are coming fast and furious and everybody's got their competing priorities and everything else. That's really, it's a great lesson for people to understand, because it is hard. It is hard when the arrows are coming, you don't have the answers. And now, curious about this, like you said, when people came to you, your response was, I don't know. I have no idea. Did you actually say, I have no earthly idea how to solve this?
Well, one press conference, I remember this specifically, I said the phrase, I didn't sign up for this. And what I meant by that was, I didn't sign up for a job as a mayor thinking I'd be dealing with a pandemic that I didn't even know what that word was before I became mayor. And I got absolutely attacked over that, over saying that. Because it was like, you sure as hell signed up for this. You signed up to run and lead the city, and this comes with it. And don't be such a wimp and figure out how to deal with it and, you know, save our city and save our community. So that's the one line I said at one point that kind of always came back to bite me. People brought that up. But no, I never said anything like that out loud. What you had to do as elected leaders, and this is what we have to do as leaders a lot of times, is we have to project confidence even when we don't have it. So Your team does not want to see a weak leader that says, I don't know. I don't know what to do. They want to see decisiveness. Even if you're questioning your own, they want to see decisiveness. So I would have to stand up every day at 10 o'clock Central before the Price is Right came on for these sweet old ladies, and I would have to share COVID numbers to the whole state of South Dakota through our CBS and ABC affiliate, and I'd have a mask on. There'd be a chart on TV, and I'd talk about where we're going, and we're flattening the curve, and blah, 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 and all this crap. I didn't believe it because I'm like, I have no control over an airborne virus. Are you kidding me? What do you think a mayor can control where people walk around and who kisses who? And all? Of course not. This is stupid. But I got to stand here and act like I am in control of this situation.
Right.
And I'm not at all. But right. I got to project confidence that I am. And so I did. And I got up every day and project confidence. Like, we're doing it, Sioux Falls. You're doing a great job. Here's where our numbers are at. Here's the things we're doing to flatten the curve. You know, did I believe it? No. But I had to project the confidence.
And that can be very tough, right? Because if you don't believe it, you're selling, right? I mean, in a lot of ways, being a great leader, it requires you to be a great salesperson at the same time.
Totally. And not lying. And I wasn't lying, but how could I, Mark, stand up in front of people and say, remember, when you go in the restaurant, keep your mask on until you sit down, then you can take it off. Makes no sense.
Right.
But that's what we did. And so I had to sell that mm-hmm. to the community because it made them feel safe. And it made them feel confident that, all right, we're doing some things. I feel safe now in my community, even though I didn't believe it. Because I'm like, so COVID doesn't spread in the aisles of the restaurant or in the booths, but only in the aisles? Like, okay, that makes no sense. But I will sell that if that's, you know, that's the orders. Like, I'll do that. So I think we have to do that sometimes as leaders, is sometimes just maybe sell what we totally don't believe in ourselves, but we know it's best for the greater good. And part of being a mayor, what has been challenging for me is I represent 225,000 people, all believe very different things than me. So I have opinions on things, but I have to realize my population has a lot of different opinions. So as soon as I try to force one belief onto them, that my personal belief, I get into trouble. So I have to think, okay, what's the greater good belief on you know, whatever that might be, instead of trying to be a, you know, someone who says, well, this is my belief, so this is what the community should believe, or this is what I think is best, so the whole community should do this as well. So sometimes you have to sell something maybe you don't totally believe in, but you know what's best for the community.
And you use the word greater good, and we defined in our people book every word of your VTO, so core values, every word of it, multiplied by genuine care and concern. What do you think about that as a definition of greater good?
Yeah, it's the genuine part of the care and concern that often gets lost in government anyway, and I guess in the private sector too, is people sniff out inauthenticity really quickly, and especially in elected leaders. And so I heard someone say once, and if this is not my quote, so please don't attribute this to me, but they said the most effective form of government is a compassionate dictatorship. Because they're like, all right, you can get things done. You don't have to deal with all the bureaucracy, but you're also a compassionate person. So you'll make the right decisions for people. And I think your point about that VTO, genuine care and compassion, if you as a leader don't have that, because you have the greatest VTO in the world, but without that second part of the equation, not a lot of that stuff is going to get done.
EOS implementers, we don't use compassionate dictator. We say compassionate prick.
Ah, there you go. Well,
like, because you're in a leadership role, you're working with a leadership team, a singular leadership team, and you're not dictating to them, right? They make their own choices, which might be a little bit different than government, but you're really just saying, I love you, and I have to say things that you're not going to like.
How you deliver that is important as what you're delivering, right? In fact, just before I recorded this, I just ran into a former employee who I had to let go about 3 years ago. And she comes up to me, hi, Mr. Mayor. Oh, I can't call you that much longer. How you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, I had to deliver some terrible news to you 3 years ago. But how I delivered it was threaded and soaked in compassion. And to this day, she's in a good spot. She still comes up to me on the street when I don't see her. the relationship is outstanding. And to me, that's always also a sign of a good leader, is like when you can realize you don't have the right people in the right seat and you have to make a change. But how you make that change is as important as making the change. And I see a lot of leaders who make the change the wrong way. And those people will tell a lot of other people how you made that change. And so, if we have nothing else, our reputation is the one thing we have to protect and trust. And so dealing with people is where those issues can get sticky. So dealing with those personnel and those people issues in a compassionate way is so, so important, I think.
You don't want to have that ruinous empathy where you avoid all the hard conversations, you don't make the hard choices, because the greater good just simply will never be achieved unless you do. And so you've got to have that compassion, and you got to do the hard thing all at the same time.
Amen. So I actually remember my first team meeting when I realized we needed to pivot to something else. First week I was a mayor. I got elected on a Thursday, sworn in on a Thursday, and then Monday we had the Monday morning meeting. First off, you never have a meeting at 8 o'clock on a Monday, and that's when we had this meeting. I'm like, who does that? So I get to City Hall like 7:30. It's like, I'm like, all right, this is my team. Let's see the hand I've been dealt, all this stuff. And I'm walking down the hallway to this big room, and I can hear them all chattering and talking. I'm like, all right, this is my team. Here we go, Paul, And I walk in that room, and as soon as I walked in, just silence. Like all the chatter stopped. It was like, holy crap, the mayor's here. Everybody shut up at attention. And I'm wearing, Jordans and jeans. I'm like, this is not my style. And I'm like, what sort of culture have I inherited here? Where it's like duck and cover, you speak when spoken to, mayor's in the room, everybody shut up. And this is not my leadership style at all. And I knew from that point, like, all right, I got some work to do to not only change how we're running meetings like this, but just change how this team perceives me. And I have to build some trust and some relationships with these folks to get them to trust me as not just their leader, but just as a colleague, because they obviously didn't see me that way.
And is that the moment you decided to implement EOS?
It's the moment when I decided we need to do something different. And then about 2 months later, my chief of staff started, and my chief of staff had run EOS at her company. And so we both spoke the same vernacular already, and we knew it. We both, as soon as she started, that was one of her top initiatives. Like she had a laundry list of things she had to do when she started. Number one was, we got to change our meeting structure, our meeting cadence, meeting hygiene to get EOS in place, because what we're doing right now is goat rodeo and this is not working.
Well, Paul, I appreciate the conversation, and I have a feeling we could probably talk for quite a long time. And I really want to know about your time as a mascot, because that's my dream. If I could be the Penn State Nittany Lion, my life would be complete. Or maybe Gritty. I'm from Philadelphia. So
being a mascot was awesome. Like, awesome. Like, you get to just dick around with people. They don't know who you are. And you get a hall pass to silly string people and live out your being a kid as an adult. And it was still back when you could dunk off a tramp and rappel down from the ceiling, and before lawyers, made you stop doing everything.
Made it no fun.
Made it no fun. So it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Paul.
Great, Mark. Great talking to you, buddy.
All right. So thinking about the five leadership abilities and hitting the ceiling with my conversation with Paul, I mean, what a honor and a privilege to talk to the mayor. And I just think that they're probably really happy who they have and who they chose over the last 8 years. And thinking about hitting the ceiling of COVID and all these other things that Paul has experienced. Number one, starting with the ability to simplify. Paul's leadership story is rooted in cutting through complexity of government. when he entered city government, he found no clear system for setting goals, meetings, or accountability. So he introduced Traction and EOS to make work simpler and much more visible. He simplified leadership around a clear cause, helping people, serving the city, and aligning those departments around a single larger mission. His job, career, calling framework also really simplifies the entrepreneur's identities. I really liked that, how he described that. The job title changes, but the calling stays the same. And in government, he had to simplify the difference between business efficiency and public service. Many entrepreneurs, including myself, look at everything like a business, and he clearly saw the differences and understands the differences, which I think is just a really great testament to him as a leader in understanding the realities on the ground. Not everything that loses money is a waste. Some things exist because, well, people need them. So next, ability to delegate and elevate. Paul clearly understands that leadership is not about personally carrying every responsibility. He points to his chief of staff as the integrator who runs the meetings and keeps the organization moving. He recognizes the limits of having 13 direct reports. No EOS implementer would recommend doing that, but that's what he has because it's sort of mandated by law. And, you know, that's just shows his awareness of the need to elevate structure, delegate responsibility, given what he had to work with in terms of a little bit more complexity than most would want in a business. His next chapter really also reflects this ability. He wants to move into leadership development, succession planning, and hey, who knows, maybe he'll become an EOS implementer. And really helping governments prepare people to step into those future roles and serve their constituents a little bit better. He frames leadership as investing in people first. The best results flow from developing people, relationships, and building that trust. So just great examples of great delegation. Next is the ability to predict. Paul's diner story is just a strong example of learning to predict cash flow problems. His agency was growing before he becomes mayor, but clients were paying late while he had already paid for the media, which taught him to change the billing model and predict a little bit better. In city government, he talks about the challenge of prediction differently because many of the metrics are trailing indicators and many forces are outside of the city's control. And so that makes prediction a little bit of a challenge for him in his situation. During COVID, he had to lead without perfect information. He couldn't predict the virus or control every outcome, and sometimes he didn't believe in the remedies, but he still had to project confidence and make decisions for the greater good and help people feel confident in where they are going, even in that level of an unpredictable environment. His comments about succession planning show another predictive leadership lesson. And governments often wait until someone retires and then they scramble and try to find someone to replace them. And Paul sees the need to anticipate leadership gaps before they become emergencies. And of course, in a democracy, when people are being voted into those places, you can't necessarily predict that. But the people who are doing the day-to-day jobs, you can do some work there. Next is his ability to systemize. This is one of the clearest and cleanest EOS themes in the episode. Paul's talking about how EOS tightened meetings, clarified goals, created that scorecard in his company, and then helped him know what people were working on. It is a system. And then when he entered the city government, he saw no system for goal setting. He saw no system for a meeting. So he introduced Traction and Rocks and Level 10 meetings. He's using 90.io as the software that this city government is running on, which is amazing. They have core values and they create this shared common language. He adapted the system instead of copying it blindly. Now, we talk a lot about running EOS purely, but really 15% is the teaching of the tools and 85% is just fully customized to your unique situation. And that's exactly what Paul did for the city. Scorecard, as an example, he had to modify that because the government data, and they don't have revenue per se, they have tax revenue, but they just had to modify and customize the system, which is just a great example of creating that system and not losing the essence and the purpose of it, but customizing it to your own unique needs. And then the city's use of rocks again, L10s, IDSing issues, and meeting ratings, and all those different types of systems drive discipline and accountability. I loved his story about the library and bringing other people together and creating a system where that they can solve creative problems in a creative way, which is a really good example of the results of a truly great system. Now moving to structure. Paul inherited a government culture where people went silent when the mayor entered. Yes, sir. That showed him that the team needed a healthier leadership structure and not just better meetings. So he introduced the city's core values: safety, teamwork, innovation, character, respect, and using that acronym STICR. EOS gave the city a structure connecting departments that might otherwise remain siloed. Again, in that library story, the police, the parks, the fire, the public health, bringing them all together to help make a better experience for everyone involved. The strongest structure lesson is that the local government improved when people knew that meeting cadence. They knew the language. They knew the goals. They knew the rocks. They could speak transparently about what they were working on. Issues were solved at the root, and hopefully they'll go away forever. And so that helped turn a large, siloed city operation into a more aligned leadership team. If this conversation gave you something to think about, I'd love to keep that going. I write a newsletter called Clarity Break Thoughts, where I share simple ideas, questions, and reminders to help you step back, think clearly, and lead with more intention. You can subscribe at eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts. Again, that's eosworldwide.com/claritybreakthoughts.